Log Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Michael Dresser Show. There's no topic this program is afraid to address or investigate, whether it be social, political, or current events, including some very sensitive cultural issues of today. The views expressed by the host, guests, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views of this station. Now, step into the realm of clarity with your host, Michael Dresser.
Welcome back. I'm Michael. You're listening to The Michael Dresser Show. The book is First, Fast, Fearless, How to Lead Like a Navy SEAL. Our guest author is Brian Ironhead Heiner, Navy SEAL Lieutenant Commander, retired. Brian, hi, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Oh, and thank you so much for being here. You know, when you really come down to it, we have very specialized services, and most people hear about SEALs, but they really, truly don't know what a SEAL is all about. So let's start with the base. What is it about a SEAL that sets them apart from all of the other members of the service?
Well, I mean, obviously, the military has a lot of great people and folks. And one of the things that separates us, I think, is probably the determination, the level of the determination and commitment that we have. Just to be a SEAL, it takes 2.5 years to be trained until you deploy the first time. So it's a very large life commitment. So they commit up front, and we let them know up front that life's going to be difficult for them, and they have to make a choice to either choose that lifestyle or not. I think it's one of the things that separates us.
Yeah, but when you come down to it, I really believe in my heart of hearts that choice is made before they even sign up. There's a certain type of person, a certain mindset that you really need to be part of the organization.
There is, and most of the people coming in are team players, and they committed. They love the country. They're patriotic, all of them. First of all,
sure.
But yeah, there's a lot of different traits that you'll see in the book that I bring. I was a training officer, recruiting as well, and I bring some of those traits out that most people would never know a Navy SEAL would have.
No, absolutely, no question about it. Want to go back 55 years. In June 1st, 1960, I was standing tall in San Diego Marine Corps Recruit Depot. Now, I went through Marine Corps training, nothing like the SEALs, and we went through it rough. So let's start out and talk about the history. How do you select? How did they come in? And what was it that created the SEALs in the first place?
Perfect. In 1962, President Kennedy, I think one of the most visionary presidents we ever had, knowing he wanted to go to the moon years before we did it. He came up with the SEAL team concept, or the military did. He tasked the military to come up with a force that can go anywhere, anytime, and do anything, because he knew there were going to be a lot of low-intensity but high strategic impact missions around the world. He knew that. And that is where he found the SEALs from underwater demolition teams that we had already had established during World War II. And he said, these guys are the toughest guys we have. So he brought them in, and we turned them in 1962. We turned into SEAL Team 1 and 2. Now, our recruiting has changed a little bit over the years, because especially since 9/11. And right now, I don't think there's a force on Earth that has as much recruiting as we do. And we have about 10,000 people that try out, that want to try out. We give about 1,000 or maybe 1,200 contracts. So, and then out of that, maybe 150, 200 will make it.
When you really come down to it, Brian, let me jump in just for a sec.
Yeah,
because when
sure.
you really come down to it, the process behind being a SEAL, everything that you do to administrate it, make it work, if we could take the same things today, put them in the schools, put them in politics, put them in business, then all of a sudden you've got that partnership, you've got that certain something that causes people to work and maneuver together. And the SEAL has one thing that there's so many things that are lacking today, and I think it's called consequence. You know, if you don't do the job right, you're going to die.
Well, yes, so that is very true. We have a consequential job, right? We use it accountability. We hold what I call extreme ownership of the outcome, and we hold people accountable. And circumstances where it doesn't seem fair, and maybe they weren't responsible for the outcome, but they're accountable for it. And that's an overall basis in how we build SEAL leaders. And we also, you know, we live a life by an ethos, a character-based organization. And I've brought this to other companies and other corporations to, instead of having rule-based organizations, which you need rules, but you need to have character-based.
Sure.
Because when that moment, when you're out there at zero dark 30 in the middle of nowhere doing making decisions, it has to be by morality, and it cannot be by rules, because there's not enough rule playbooks to win an insurgency. So in the business world, the same way. I mean, things are moving so fast. And I talk to people about leadership, and it's fast. It's a fast-paced world, and what I call in the book is it moving at the speed of war, and everything changes constantly, but you got to get used to that environment.
Yeah, and the one thing that I learned years and years ago basically was this. When you're in trouble, when you have it coming down on you, that guy at your back, it doesn't matter if he's green, blue, orange, or brown, or whatever the case may be, you're both there to protect each other. And I think that in and of itself is something that this country is starting to miss today.
Well, that's a good point. And, I speak about that as well in the book. And people ask me, and I used to brief, you know, congressional leaders and different people on the training. And, we don't care if you're black, white, brown, green, yellow, whatever. I don't care what sex you are, to be honest with you. A warrior,
sure,
like we look at as in the SEAL teams, if someone's there, willing and able to do the job, we don't really care. So it's a good organization.
I think you just said the word.
Yeah,
Brian, you just said the word, warrior. It's like if we have a woman president coming up,
right,
the moment that woman is elected into office, she's not a woman anymore. She's the most powerful person in the world, and I think that's what we transition into, and all of those other gotchas and the labels that we have disappear.
I sure hope so. I mean, I think that's the world we all look forward to having, you know, and in the leadership world, that's, you know, you can't have biases like that. You got to be open, and everyone's the same, you know, as long as you're willing to show up and do the job.
Now, one thing that we are taught, and I mean taught, is fear. How do you move through that in SEAL team training? Yeah, fear.
Well, we do fear inoculation constantly. You know, we get people to the point as close as we can to combat. And almost every block of training, they have to understand what that fear does to them. And in the book, First Fast and Fearless, I use that as an example because in war, people understand that you're afraid. But to be an innovative organization, you can't allow fear to permeate the perimeters, I call it, because people are already scared enough. And when you get fearful, the frontal part of your brain, the executive part that makes us human beings, shuts down. So if you want to have a good idea and have a problem solved, you need to knock the fear off inside the organization. And we do that in our brotherhoods. You know, we have, one of the strong emotions we have is love for each other. Sounds a little bit strange, but, you know, we're willing to sacrifice for one another. And I think once you build that, you build an environment that's playful. You know, I mean, SEAL teams is one of the funnest places I've ever been, even the most miserable place. But, you know, we had a good time doing what we did.
But that's the point. So, you were, when I say you in the general sense of the word, Brian, I believe that you're born for it. It's not something that just happens to you. It's inside. It's innate. And what it sounds like is what you do. You bring it out into the open where someone can actually get their identity through it. Because we search for identity. We want to be something or someone,
right,
acknowledged. And being a SEAL team member is an identity, and I think that's extremely important. The other thing is, and I know you touch on this, is the protecting your perimeter, shielding yourself, you know, and your team from enemies that destroy a team from within. Look what's happened to this country. We are still toe-to-toe the most powerful country in the world. You don't stand up to us. But if you want us, you come inside and you do it from within and you separate. That in and of
itself
is very powerful.
That's a very powerful. You're exactly right. As long as we standing shoulder to shoulder, shield to shield, nothing can stop us.
Nothing. No way.
I refer to that in the second part of the book as far as we make references to Spartans, how the Spartans lived their lives and how they looked at the shield. You know, the mother used to tell the Spartan son, you know, come back with your shield or come back on it. Meaning the shield is there to protect the guy beside you. Your spear is there to defend yourself. So come back with that shield. So,
yeah.
And that's, that, you know, I think this country, we could use a taste of that, you know, especially in the executive level and then get, talking about Congress and how they can actually get along, collaborate, and get something done. I hope the next president can, is charismatic enough to do that.
No, absolutely, and, and I'm going to go back to something early on, that if you put this into business, you put it into schools, you put it into politics, basically what you're saying is it's a way to come together and to become unified. That's what we're missing today, and that's what we really need. The SEAL team philosophy should be spilling out through the rest of the country. And by the way, you don't have to be a SEAL member. You don't have to know how to use, you know, weapons, et cetera, et cetera. You know, your mind is a weapon. Your ability to move forward is a weapon. Your ability to protect yourself and your family against whatever is a weapon. So on all levels, it's all the same thing.
I agree with you. And I think, you know, the character is a big, strong point that you'll see in the book. I base a lot of that on the very beginning, and the rest of the book goes through the character. Because for us, that is the first and foremost thing. I mean, we have to have people with strong moral convictions. And, you know, you can't build upon a weak foundation, and that's the foundation of our lives. Leaders face that as well. I mean, what do they – I just talked to a group about, you know, building their own leadership point of view, and, you know, like I do in the beginning of the book, and they've never done it. And these are senior-level people. I'm like, well, if you don't know what you stand for, you know, like you say, like, if you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there. And, you know – I think writing something
by the way,
down,
that's not funny. I mean, it's not even a joke. There are businesses today, organizations today, that if you ask them to define their, you know, their definition, their destination, they can't do it.
They can't.
No.
Yeah, I know. I did some. I was with Ken Blanchard. If you know him, he's a very famous leadership guy. Yeah, I was at one of his seminars. He invited me to, and I just asked the question of all these executives in the room. I think it was 20 or 30. It's like, how many of you can tell me what your mission statement is? That's a 20-word document. 20 words.
Yeah.
Not a single one of them could. Now, one woman raised her hand, and she got the gist of it. I'm like, okay, fair enough. So it shows you, if they don't know where they're going sometimes, and it needs to be put on paper and committed to.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to fear again. Yeah, I'm going to go back to fear again. There are people who are frightened to death to speak up. And because of that, you know, it dilutes what we do, and it dilutes who we are. So it's that also the ability to speak up. The ability to speak up is the same kind of strength that you need in combat.
It's actually more important than physical courage, that moral courage. And Patton talked a lot about that. Well, I think that is the leadership's, it's a leadership issue, because if people don't have the courage to speak up to their boss at every level and every echelon, then the organization's lying to itself all the way to the boat sinks.
Yeah,
and,
no question.
I talk a lot about that in the last part of that book, and I think it's a very important thing. If you don't have a comfortable environment where leadership allows people to express themselves and to be honest, you know, because some leaders don't want to hear bad news.
Right. Like,
nobody does, but, you know, to be able to listen to the bad news is a critical skill for leadership.
Oh, absolutely. But define leadership. This is going to be a tough question, but define leadership. You know, we hear it, but truly, what is it?
You know, and it's just a short definition. I like the definition of it's giving people the ability or people to want to and to be able to do something special or important. And it's kind of simple.
I think it's
they want to, and then you have to set the conditions for teams that they can thrive and move faster than you could move alone. So, I think to be able to want to and be able to do something special.
Yeah, because when you really come down to it, you know, that word engagement is a very important word. Because what happens with leadership, it's getting everybody together in such a way that those people that you are leading, quote unquote, feel that they are part of the success of the organization or whatever it is that they're moving forward on. If they don't feel part of it, if they don't feel that they've contributed to the outcome, you're going to get a diluted percentage of them. So they've got to be engaged to a point whereby they feel part of the end result at the end of the month.
That is 100% truth. I love it. You know, I one of the things I stress in the book, and the most people don't really ever mention, is followership. And that's a part of followership. If a leader sets the right conditions, the right environment with trust and respect all the way up and down the chain of command, he or she can have people following, actively following. It's not a negative word.
Sure. No,
because
not
we,
at
we
all.
In the SEAL teams, well, we in the SEAL teams, we know sometimes even in combat or in or planning for combat, we might not come up with the best plan. But every failed, when you look at the statistics and failed missions and failed business plans, 75% of it comes down to the actual execution of it, not the plan. So we understand that once that plan is decided, the person in charge makes the decision. We understand the person, the officer, is acting selflessly. He's acting for the betterment of the group and the mission. The men, we go the mission, the men, then me. That's the order of events. And teams that understand, see their leaders acting that way, they will get that 100% engagement out of them. But if you're a self-serving leader, you'll never get it.
One of the rules that I have lived by for many years now, and it's basically this, that a good leader knows when to follow, and a good teacher knows when to be a student. And I got to tell you, Brian, I change hats 5-6 times a week.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. Leaders are, right, that's right. Leaders are learners,
Yeah, absolutely, no question about it. And that's why I think the military is so critically important. I don't like what they're doing with the military right now. You know, they're diluting it here, diluting it there, and this and that and whatever. But the real point here is you put a person in the job, you let them do the job, you don't tell them how to do it. Hitler, during the Second World War, leading up to it, and then he did not listen to his generals. If he would have listened to his generals, the man might have won the war.
That is absolutely spot on. And one of the things I'll give you quick to is that General McChrystal is one of my mentors for this. And he understood once 9/11 happened, he was already a one-star general. He changed his leadership philosophy about 180 degrees because he realized the old, pyramid command and control system didn't work. And I write about that a lot, is that you, instead of giving all the orders from the top, you have to give guidance and you have to give intentions. What does the outcome of the mission, the success of the battlefield look like? And then people have to be trusted. They have to be team players, love each other, all those things to get to that point where they can make that decision. And that's the leading at the speed of war. And
that became, absolutely.
I tell you, the military has changed. Most people would know it, but especially Special Operations Command, is it's night and day since 9/11. I mean, we have learned a lot. We've learned how to lead under these kind of volatile situations, where years and years of exposed combat.
You know, in the old days, I remember, I'll never forget this. I'm standing here, I'm doing guard duty in front of the commander's Quonset hut, and I'm standing at attention, and there's this guy that I went to high school with, walked by, he's in another it's another group, and we smiled at each other, and about the time I smiled, the DI walked through, picked up his sword on the handle end, hit me in the chest. I flew over the bench, and I never did that again. But those are the old days. Those were saying, this is what you do.
Yeah, they're a hard lesson. Well, the military still does that when you first come in. It's still very authoritarian and, making people understand what orders mean.
Brian, didn't they have for a while in the Army a timeout card?
They do across the military. A training timeout is what it's called.
Yeah, if you got too much pressure, you get timeout.
Well, it was not so much pressure, but they had a person drown in the pool. And it was about 20-some years ago, I think he was a rescue swimmer for the Navy, if I'm not mistaken, 20-some years ago. He drowned because he couldn't quit and he couldn't time out.
Yeah.
So he ended up just drowning. So, they do that, but, for the SEAL, we have it in the SEAL teams.
Okay, there's a point. There's a point when all of those things should happen. I think, though, we've gotten a little bit too sensitive, not so much the people that are in the combat teams, but the other people, the people leading the people, it's you only shoot when, and if there's what was that other thing I saw? There was something ridiculous. When I remember, I'll call you at 4 a.m. But anyway, but there's some really ridiculous rules out there now. Combat is combat, war is war, and damn it, when it comes down to it, Brian, there are no rules. You get in there and you win.
You do win. You do win. The last years we've learned a lot from fighting insurgency, which is it's very difficult. it's a mind game. It's not as much a physical game as it is understanding what you're doing. And, you know, I tell you, when we were in 05 and 06 when Al Anbar, the western part of Iraq, the tipping point of the war, I was involved heavily in that. And I remember changing the mindset of the SEALs. And what it came down to is we started working with the Iraqis. You know, we'd never did combat advising where, you know, we worked with a force that might have been shooting at us a year earlier. But it came down to leadership, how we treated them, how we treated their sheikhs, their colonels, their tribal leaders. That's what the tipping point was.
Absolutely. We're just about out of time, Brian. We could talk about this all night. So, but website we can find you at and find the book.
EdHeiner.com. And the First Fast and Fearless on Amazon. It's on everything. It's all of it. Hell, I'm a L.A. Times bestseller now. I just found out.
Wonderful. And it's H-I-N-E-R. And if anybody missed it, it's up
H-I-N-E-R.
On our website now. Yeah, okay. And by the way, again, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Take
Talk
care.
Soon.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Stay with us, guys. We'll be right back with Alan Nyland. Life is great, even when it sucks.
Seems like dreams, like I always had, could be, should be, making me glad. Why am I blue? It's up to you to explain. I'm thinking maybe, baby, I'll go away someday.
Welcome back. I'm Michael. You're listening to The Michael Dresser Show. Alan Nyland with us, the author of Life is Great Even When It Sucks, and it's called What Makes People Do the Things That They Do. Alan's faced many challenges in life and overcame them with insight, with humor, and that thing called intelligence. She successfully negotiated living and balancing the personal and business relationship demands faced by living faced by living and working on the same farm with four generations in close proximity. Ellen's been an unofficial life coach and a source of counsel for a long time now, but it was after her move to the Netherlands and Canada in 1998 when she became a certified professional co-active coach, and she saw and helped many people and families deal with the stresses put on personal and family relationships. Her biggest passion in life is to empower others and help them discover their own magnificence. And Ellen Nyland, hi, welcome to the show.
Hello. I'm here.
Hi. Good. And thank you for being here. You know, when you really come down to it, you know, life is great even when it sucks, and what makes people do the things that they do. I would venture to guess, and stop me if I'm wrong, but Ellen, I would venture to guess that we do what we do because we're trained to do it, and we don't know that there are choices to make to take an easier road.
Yeah, that sums it up in a very, very short period of time.
Sure.
And there is a little bit more to it.
Of course, no question about it. Now, what was it for you that caused you to get into the field that you're in now?
As a child, I always wondered, what made people do the things they do? And I have seen numerous times that people are not saying one thing and do another. Hmm. I found that very, very fascinating. And what I had some really good examples in my life for people who came over extraordinary things and how strong and graceful they were. And those were my examples to move on and really seek the life. And then coaching came on my path, and I'm going, that's it. This is my way that I can empower others.
do you find a kind of a common problem people have when they come to you? I mean, if they walk through the door, you would pretty much know what they were going to say.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily, because everybody comes for a different reason. And, you know, you have, I have done some business coaching and family dynamic coaching. So it's very versatile, actually.
Okay, so but when we talk business, we talk family. Is, and this is the question now, is a business, when you really come down to it, is a successful business a family? You know, we're brought up, you know, with certain certain rules to live by. We want to be acknowledged. We want to be accepted by, you know, those mom and dad and the rest of the family. So if we are, that's what we look for in life. But then again, too, when we go into business, we look for the same thing. So would a successful business also be a family?
Actually,
I don't mean literally.
I would say it is. Actually,
yeah.
I would say it is.
Yeah.
And the more you treat your employees as a person, so that that person gets valued as who they actually are, yeah, that really helps your business success. Absolutely.
Now, there are 5 points. There's a 5-point system that you've created. Now, what are we dealing with when we look at those points?
Well, it is a 5-point system. It is trust, accountability, commitment, conflict, and resolve. Those in itself are... Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, is this something that no matter who comes in, whether it's on a family level or a business level, et cetera, these are the things that usually show up? There's somewhere that one has to be cleaned up and corrected.
Yeah, and they are so intertwined. You're absolutely right, Michael. They always show up, but they are so intertwined. And if there is insecurity on one of them, and what normally is, we all have insecurities on one level or the next, it will bleed into the other ones. So even if you have the slightest insecurity on commitment, it will bleed into trust because they are interconnected.
Oh, sure.
That's why
I think people are frightened to death of commitment.
Yeah.
You know, what I've seen happen over the years is you and I meet. Now, I'm not going to show you who Michael is. I'm going to show you who I think you would like Michael to be like. And then all of a sudden, everything's great until I get comfortable, and now I become who I am, and you say to me, well, you're changed. You're not who you were when we met. Yes, I am. I just wasn't who I am when we first met. You know, we live with these masks on.
Yeah, and if you really look closely in your own life, we all wear masks, different every day, different ones. Then you are a daughter, then you are a mother, then you are a friend, then you are a radio host, then you are a coach.
Yeah.
But the more you make the mask all the same, that's the closer you come to your beautiful I am status.
You know, with the steps you just talked about, you know, the wife, the mother, the radio host, the coach, etc., aren't all of these a level of expression?
No, I think those are more roles we are pushed into as children. That's what we've been taught.
Mm-hmm.
As a friend, you behave like this. As a mother, this is your expectation, and as a radio host, this is what the expectations are. Or as a doctor, you know, you name it.
Yeah. See, because when you really come down to it, it's all of those things that we've been trained not to be that we have to. And thank God there's people like you around, because what happens is, you hold us by the hand, you allow us to look underneath what we think we see and see that real self down there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's written in so many poems. A lot of people are afraid of that because it's so beautiful and so pure that people don't believe it's them.
And how do you know when you've hit? Yeah, how do you know when you've hit the I am status?
It is it's something you can't see, but well, actually, somebody else can see it.
Yeah.
Because when you come from your I am status, you start glowing from the inside out. And you see it on babies. When you see a newborn baby, you see the only beautiful bundle of energy, what it actually is.
Yeah.
And it's not taught yet.
And, you know, because when you come down to it, you know, they say beauty comes from inside. It really does. I have seen some very attractive people that were not good looking at all. You know, there was just that expression on their face, that feel around them. And then I've seen some people, they're okay looking. And when you sat and you talked to them, they became absolutely gorgeous.
So true.
Yeah.
So true. Yeah.
And it really does come from, but, you've got to be able to recognize it before you can unleash it.
And looking for it.
Yeah. A good point, because there's so many people who are looking for it. They don't quite know what they're looking for. And if you can't define it, you're not going to get it. So in essence, it takes being held by the hand. You know, we're in a world we get taught. Things don't just come automatically.
Yeah. And this is where you take your two-year-old or your three-year-old out in the yard and say, hey, let's jump in some leaves. Look at the leaves. Oh, look how beautiful they are. Do you see the different colors? And this is something we can do ourselves to really start looking around everyday things.
Yes.
And find something that really, really is special to you. I mean, one of the things that's special for me is when my husband and I are driving, I have my coffee there, we're chatting a little bit, he's driving, and I can so enjoy that cup of coffee.
Yeah. Which is great when you really come down to it. The other thing, too, is the ability to uncover, to address those strengths, those weaknesses, and they all come, obviously, from your beliefs and all of the other things and patterns. But unless you have that system to get down to what it is that causes you to be who you are at the time, good, bad, or indifferent, there'll never be change.
Yeah, and people are so afraid of their weaknesses because we try to cover it up. Nobody wants to mess up. But the beauty of it is, if you really look at them, you can work with them. And then you can go, oh, yeah, I messed up. Oh, look at that. What a learning opportunity. And you can make it what you want from it.
Absolutely.
Instead
there's no question about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because when you really come down to it, there's another area of consideration, concern, is that we think, we as human beings, men, we think we know how to love a woman. That's not so. You don't. And the way you find out is you ask. Because when it really comes down to it, we assume that we know, and you don't know. The mother assumes she knows how to love her child. She doesn't know. You've got to ask the question. Because when you really come down to it, okay, you and I meet, we get into this wonderful relationship, and we're together for 2 years. Now, the way that I receive love, hypothetically, is a look, a wink, tone, a voice, expression. That's how I receive it. And you, on the other hand, hypothetically, if I buy you something, it means I love you. So we're going along for a couple of years, and I'm winking and looking, and I'm doing all my stuff, showing you how much I love you in the way that I've learned to receive it myself. So 2 years later, come by, I walk in the house one day, you're all packed up. I said, what's going on? He said, I'm leaving. What do you mean you're leaving? Well, why are you leaving? Well, you don't love me. What do you mean I don't love you? You never show me. Never showed you in a way that you learned to receive it. And to eliminate that entire problem, it's just a very simple question. And the question is how do you know when you're loved?
That you said it all. It is so true. People don't ask.
Yeah.
And people assume. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's the whole point. And a very simple, think about moms and kids, a boy, girl, whatever the case may be. That simple question, look at the problems that it would eliminate down the line. Because once you know, you can do it.
Yep. And there is a trick to asking a good question. Did you know that?
No.
A good question, they call it in coaching, powerful questions. And powerful questions are questions that start with what, when, how, so that you ask for a response instead of a reaction. When you ask for a response, then you give people the chance to explain themselves. And you're not going into that the other person has to go on the defensive side.
Oh,
and
that makes sense.
Creates an open, yeah, that creates an open dialogue.
Makes total sense. But you have to know how to do it. You have to know to do that. That's the important thing. Now, let's look at something else. The embracing your uniqueness, using the I Am Status toolbox. What's in that toolbox?
Well, in that toolbox, and that's the beauty of every person, every toolbox is different. And the tools you're born with are the tools you need in this life. And there are ways to discover it. Coaching is one of them. But it is the traits you use, and subconsciously you use them already, when you are stressed, when you need your strength is what is in your strength, that is your toolbox. I mean, my strength, and I only can talk about myself, right?
Sure.
Is I'm a visionary, I'm very generous, I'm very forgiving, I'm very truthful, and I can go on and on. I have 10 qualities. And don't be impressed by this, because you have equal impressive tools in your toolbox. They may be not the same, but they are equal impressive. It's just kind of undercover them by really looking at what are my strengths and what qualities do I admire in others, because those are kind of mirrored back to you.
Yeah. Totally mirrored back to you.
Yep.
The good, the bad, the indifferent, it's all there. And I think when we stop worrying about what other people think, it is a great step forward.
Yeah. Yeah, because I sometimes laugh, you know, when you see some very secure person, and when you really look closely, you can see their insecurity, like my own or yours. Or
yeah.
Everybody has insecurities.
No question. You get to a point in life where insecurities are based, again, if I repeat this 1,000 times, on what you think, not you personally, but what you think someone else thinks about you. And that's the key. When you want to prove yourself to someone, and when you stop proving yourself, all of a sudden the world starts to turn around.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because if we stop pleasing each other, and don't get me wrong, it's not that you have to go against everybody.
Right.
But when your toolbox says, this is my strength, and that's how that is my strength, this is what I want to use it, and I don't go into my weaknesses and try to fluff that up. Well, you can fluff it up, but you know what I'm saying? You're not going to go down deep in
right.
Drawing on that.
Oh, no question about
strength.
It. No, absolutely.
Yeah.
And again, it's that worrying about what somebody else thinks. I have a great answer for people. Tell me you think I'm homely.
Pardon? Say that again?
Okay, tell me you think that I'm homely.
That you are homely?
Yeah, you know, tell me you think that. I'm going to give you a good answer for it. Go ahead.
Now I'm a little confused about the question, if you don't mind.
Oh, no, no, just say to me, Michael, I think you're homely.
Oh, Michael, I think you're homely.
And I'm good at it. What are you going to do with that? Diffused and gone. Do you hear it?
Yeah.
And not being affected by what comes at you. And I think that's where it really comes down to it. Okay, we are just starting to run out of time. This one we could do all night.
Yeah.
Website where we can find you in the book at.
It's ellennyland.com.
Wonderful. And by the way, if anybody missed it, it's up on our website right now. Ellen, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me, Michael.
Oh,
and
my absolute pleasure.
I wish you a wonderful evening.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah,
good night.
Bye. Michael Dresser Show. Mylan Libous with us, the author of A Shift Towards Purpose, Secrets to an Amazing Life. Mylan's got years of experience as a writer, an entrepreneur, and a coach. She's been featured on several radio shows. She's originally from Lithuania and now lives in West Palm Beach, Florida, and spends her time between the USA and France. And let us say, Mylan, welcome to the show.
Hi, Michael. Thank you very much. I just want to correct you. You pronounce my name as Milan.
Oh, Milan. Okay.
Yes.
Can I start
Milan.
Over?
Thank you.
Milan.
Sure. No problem.
Okay. I will get it right forever and ever now. Okay.
Okay.
Now, but by the way, when you really come down to it and you talk about purpose, are there so many people in life, you would think purpose would just be something automatic, but that's not so, is it?
It's not. I think the key is to really have awareness of your need to self-actualize. And this awareness comes to different people at different phases in their lives. So in my case, it's been I was in my early 40s when I realized that I really it's not enough for me to be successful according to social norms. I need to feel fulfilled inside, and that was not in my 20s and not even in my 30s. So yeah, it differs for different people.
You know, and it really comes down to it, fulfillment. There's such a different definition for so many people. It's like the word love. You and I could walk down any given street in any country, France or in the United States, wherever, and ask 15 people what love means, and we're going to get answers from, you know, wonderful happiness to laying on the floor bleeding while somebody's walking out of the room. So, and I really believe that's what it comes down to. We all have to create our own definition of what we want, and then establish the purpose, and then, more important, the roadmap to get there.
Exactly. Well said.
Now, when you come down to it, purposeful. Purposeful living. When was that for you? When did that light bulb go on and you realized that that was just more than a word?
Like I said, I was in my early 40s and I was working on Wall Street. I was successful according to norms, societal norms. And at some point, I started to feel numb. I started to feel that I don't really know what where I'm going with my life and why I'm doing what I'm doing, because I didn't feel fulfilled, and I didn't feel that I was aligned with who I truly am. And that was a very that was the beginning of a very challenging phase in my life. And I decided to quit my very comfortable corporate career. I went to business school. I graduated from Wharton Business School, but I still wasn't sure what exactly is the right career for me. What was authentic career that is aligned with who I really am? So I went through a few challenging iterations of my career. I became a real estate investor, and then I became a coach, and now I write books. So like I say to a lot of clients and people I meet, don't expect that your purposeful life will unfold as a straight line. For many people, for most people, it's a lot of zigging and zagging, and that's okay. Because during this time, you actually get skills and very important awareness that ultimately will lead you where you are. And I like that, just like you said, purpose has different, just like love has different definitions for many people. I can say success is also very differs for different people.
Sure.
But what is important is that, and I believe it was Anthony Robbins who said this, that success without fulfillment feels like a failure. And that's that was how I felt when I was successful working my prestigious and very well compensated job on Wall Street. But it's not easy just to, you know, jump. You know, fear is very real, and it's fear of uncertainty, fear of change is very real for everybody, pretty much. So
there's a magic word here. There's a magic word here, and the magic word is expression. And when you really come down to it, the essence of all of it, success, happiness, whatever, when you feel, you in the general sense of the word, when you feel that you have the ability to express yourself and be heard in the world, all of a sudden that's success. And then whatever it takes, what it looks like, you know, to get around that, to do it, is another thing. But it really comes down to when you feel stuck is when your expression is stuck. And 9 out of 10 times we have expression, but we don't know what it is that we want to express. And that's what I'm hearing you say. This is where you find out.
And that's why I like to embellish your word expression with another word, authentic expression. So
oh, yeah.
What is important is that you really express yourself authentically, and which means that true to who you are, not because someone wants you to be someone else, not because you know, something is prestigious in your culture or well-paid or well-regarded. It's just because that's who you are, and you are lucky to be in a position where you can express yourself authentically to who you are.
No, absolutely. And sometimes that comes accidentally. You're not even thinking about it. All of a sudden you're there, you wake up, and you're in the middle of it. But if you're not in that place, you've got to have the steps to take to get there. That's why, you know, people like yourself are out there. You've been there. You've done it. You know what it's like to walk around lost and finally find yourself. And that's what most people need today. And if I say this 1,000 times a day, it's not enough. We need to be held by the hand.
That's true. And sometimes it's important to realize that you need to ask for help.
Sure.
For some time, I was not realizing this, that I really needed help. And finally, when awareness of this need for help was clear, it appeared, and it was very important for me. And I just want to say that change usually is driven by inspiration, desire for some people, but for many people, it's desperation and pain. And
sure.
In my case, that was the case. My change was driven by pain and symptoms like numbness. And I realized that this emotional pain and numbness are basically symptoms of living their own life.
By the way, and those other people
alive,
that are around you in your life. Yeah, those other people that are around you in your life. You're not sure if they're going to agree with the changes you want to make. You're not sure if, you know, and all of these things come into play, and then we dilute who we are and what we really want out of life, and purpose gets diluted because we're worrying about what somebody else is going to think.
Exactly. Exactly. And that was my case, too. I was not, believe me, everybody in my family thought that I am completely crazy, what I'm doing, and some of them stopped talking to me, and, you know, there were a lot of ruptures. Because of my decision, because they couldn't, for the sake of God, understand how could I do something like that. Especially after I graduated from Wharton Business School, I didn't go back to corporate America. So it's a lot of challenging decisions and choices that one has to make, but it's all worth it. It's so worth it because nothing is as painful as staying stuck somewhere where you don't belong, and that's how I felt.
Sure. No question about it. And no one else can live your life. You know, there are people who try to get in your life and tell you what to do, and they've got all these great ideas and concepts. But when it comes down to it, it's not you, it's not the essence of you, and it is not the purpose of you.
That's true.
Yeah. And that's a hard thing to deal with most people. Most people are frightened to death to upset someone. Someone will think something of them if they don't do what they want them to. And that is nothing more than a learned response. So if you can learn it, you can unlearn and you can relearn.
And that's why I like to say that at some point in your life, we have to choose ourselves. I had to choose myself, because otherwise I was just dying inside. And, you know, when you're unhappy, your family ultimately will not be happy to see you like that. So I had to choose myself, and that's what I did.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? There's another transition that you have to make. And it happened to me in around 2001, 2002. I had been recently divorced, and she and I are still friends. She does my taxes. We're buddies. But but we were divorced. I stayed in the house. And it was one of those things, if you've ever been divorced or been with somebody for a long period of time in a certain place, you can still hear them. You can hear the footsteps coming up the stairs and on and on and on. So one day, I'm standing in the kitchen by myself. I got my dogs, my cats, they're all over the place. And I started to make tacos. And I started to make more tacos. And before I knew it, I was so involved in making tacos, it was just me there, but I had the entire kitchen table loaded with food. And I sat down, and I started to eat, and I enjoyed myself like I've never enjoyed myself before. And at that moment, I got it. I didn't need anyone there to enjoy myself. Didn't mean I didn't want someone there, but I didn't need anybody there. I didn't need anybody to go to a show with. I didn't need anybody to go out to a restaurant. And I think that is the transition. Wanting is fine. Needing is when you're in trouble.
Very well said. Exactly.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Yes.
Yeah. And the tacos are still good. But when you really come down to it, it's a process, isn't it?
It is, and that's why, you know, I never thought that I would write the book. But a few people asked me, like, why you decided to write the book. I said I didn't really decide to write the book. It just, I felt that I was pregnant with this information, with this book, and it just, you know, I just started writing without thinking, you know, oh, English is my second language. Oh, will it be right? I just needed to put this on the pages and share this with people. And
sure.
This book was written some time ago, and only this year in September I published this, and it became bestseller, to my surprise again.
It's
but,
great.
Yes, sometimes books are written just because you cannot not read them, not write them.
Yeah.
So that was the case with this one, because it was just flowing through me, I guess.
You know, there comes a time when an author sits down and writes. I'm an author myself. I've been through this. And you sit down and you write, and you do all of these things, and when you're done, you go back, whether it's fact, fun, fiction, fantasy, whatever the case may be, and you realize that there's somewhere in that book you learn something about yourself that you weren't aware of before. Where was that for you?
I always felt that I'm like a techie person. Like, you know, I'm good at math. I studied physics. And writing this book, I realized that I really enjoy serving people by helping them to achieve a life of prosperity. I never thought, you know, that's when I decided to become a coach. It all happened almost at the same time. I realized that I really want to serve people by empowering them with the information that is already in them, like this knowledge of what is the authentic career for you is in you. It's not your parents, it's not your friends who could give you advice what you should do in life. It's in you. And that's what I wrote in this book. I wrote how you can actually mine this information out of your body, because your body has intelligence. And that's this realization that I really love and enjoy helping other women to discover what I discovered for myself became such a self-discovery for myself. They said, okay, that's what I want to do. I want to write books, and I want to empower women become the best versions of themselves. And that's what
yeah.
I do now.
Wonderful. And you found your purpose and your expression.
That's true. My authentic expression.
Authentic expression. I'll write that down. Yeah. No, absolutely you did. Your authentic expression. Okay, we're just about out of time, so let me ask you this. Website we can find you at.
The website is daretochangelife.com. That's my coaching website, and I offer complimentary discovery call with me, and we can get clarity about what your listeners need to find in their lives and their career. I also have another website called millenlevis.com. That's my author website. And you can get a free audiobook on this website if you choose to sign up there. And also, my book is available on Amazon, and the name of the book is A Shift Towards Purpose, Secrets to an Amazing Career. So all of this information is out there. And like I said, I offer a free audiobook, and it's pretty awesome. I listened to this book myself on my walk along the beach, and I was like, really? I wrote this book? It was very interesting.
That's great.
Very interesting feeling. Yes.
Yeah, I know. I got it. Okay, by the way, if anybody missed it, it's up on our website, so all the information is there. And I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for having me. Take care.
Oh, my pleasure. Take care. Bye-bye. Thank you.
to say goodbye. The sweetness and the sorrow teach me love to say. But I can't what I did for love, what I did for love. Look, my heart is a sound. The gift is ours to follow. It's as if we'd always
welcome back. I'm Michael. You're listening to The Michael Dresser Show. Joseph Cardillo with us, the author of Body Intelligence. That's and listen to this close. your bodies, your body's energy. Harness your body's energy for your absolute best life. He's a PhD, a top-selling author in the fields of health, mind, body, spirit, and psychology, an expert in attention training, creative thinking, and body energy. He's taught his methods to more than 20,000 students at various colleges, universities, institutes. He's a regular contributor to Psychology Today and is the author of Be Like Water, the Body Energy Classic, and he holds a doctorate in holistic psychology and in mind-body medicine. Joseph, I welcome to the show.
Hi, Michael. How are you?
Oh, I am good. It's been a few years, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. But I love your show. I'm glad to be back.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure to have you here. You know, when we talk about body intelligence, you know, that's something that most people have no concept that exists. But if we break it down into common everyday language, what is body intelligence?
Well, body intelligence is, I break this down into two parts. Part one, your body is an incredibly intelligent machine, and the body is capable of drawing energy from everything around it, and including within it, the body itself. So the body is able to get to acquire us the energy that we need for the various tasks that we do throughout the day, and even for the long run. And I mean physical and also mental and, you know, spiritual too. The second part of body intelligence is, you know, you can consider it a BQ, and that involves our awareness, and our awareness is key, because once we understand how the body gathers energy from its surroundings and from itself, and what mechanisms trigger that, then we can start to draw the right energy for the right task, and that really is the hallmark of body intelligence, using the right energy for the right task. Because when we do, we flow. We are at the top of our game, and we walk away from activity feeling better rather than drained.
No, absolutely. You know, we talk about energy a lot, and a lot of people do. And I think the greatest example of energy and how energy works is this, that the brain is an electrochemical factory. I mean, there's no question about that. Everything that happens in that body comes out of that brain in one way, shape, or form through various chemicals that are released. Okay, that said, I think the best example is a chiropractor. You go to a chiropractor's office, and he adjusts your spine. Why does he adjust the spine? Because somewhere there's a disconnect, meaning that energy going from the brain through the spine to, which is your central nervous system, that's where that is, that energy going to the spine gets released to certain parts of the body to allow the body to function. If there is a disconnect, the energy gets stuck. So what the chiropractor does, he connects you, and all of a sudden you're working again. And I think that's probably one of the best examples of energy I've heard in years and years and years.
Absolutely. You know, the other day I was speaking at a convention of New York State teachers. It was a statewide teachers convention. And, you know, so somebody asked, you know, can you give us an example of, you know, how the body can provide the energy you need? And I said, well, how many people have felt, you know, stressed out or felt that they really need to calm down at the workplace? And, you know, of course, who hasn't?
Yeah, right.
So,
great,
you know,
question.
I just, you know, I turned around, I showed him an acupressure point, and I said, if you just take your two fingers and touch that and just kind of massage in a circular motion and press down, I said, you'll feel the energy depleting from you just like as if you were releasing air from a tire. And then I showed him another one, another acupressure point, same thing, different location, that will bring their energy up when they need it. So I said, there, you know, here are two points on your body that all you need to do is a light massage, and you can bring yourself down when you need it, and you can bring yourself up. But, you know, I've got hundreds of things like this in the book, and they don't all involve acupressure. They involve maybe simpler things.
Yeah.
Which is why I love bringing it.
We have this
yes.
absolute total control, but it's knowing that we have the control and how to use the control. I remember I got into an argument with somebody one day, one of those nasty ones, which rarely happen, but they happen. So I slammed out the door and I stopped and I forced myself to smile. And all of a sudden, the chemicals changed. And,
oh, absolutely.
And I felt completely different. I walked back in and fixed it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and our bodies have, you know, they're mechanisms, but I like calling them apps because people
yeah.
understand apps because of the electronic connection. And, you know, in my house, it's my 11-year-old daughter that is able to, you know, she points to my
yeah.
iPod or my iPhone and says, you know, you could be doing what you're trying to do so much easier if you just let me download this app for you. And I let her,
that's
I push
funny.
A button, and there it is. But, you know, our bodies are the same way. There's all these little functions that if we know how they work, we can get the energy we need for the tasks that we do and walk away feeling great rather than drained.
Now, by the way, let's look at the reverse of that. You can also be controlled
mm-hmm.
if somebody knows what they're doing with energy and how to manipulate
oh, absolutely.
You. Yeah, and I
yeah.
really think when you look at neuromarketing and all of those things, that everything is set up in a particular way to cause you to have a specific reaction. And once we start to really get that, all of a sudden, you know, the world changes. And I give you a prime example of that. If you want somebody to do something, you got to go beyond that conscious mind and that resistance, that filter between the conscious and unconscious. So what you have to do is you have to get the conscious mind out of the way to get into that mm-hmm. unconscious mind to make the suggestions that will cause whatever it is you're looking for. Watch television. 9 out of 10 times, you're going to see a woman with a great-looking rear end. And what happens is your eyes, I'm serious, I'm not trying to be funny, your eyes go to that. While you're concentrating on that, what they're saying is bypassing your conscious mind and going right into that unconscious mind, and the next thing you find yourself in the store buying one.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, there's all kinds of triggers. And actually I think, you know, I talk about that kind of stuff in a couple of different chapters in the book, you know, in terms of marketing and especially in terms of marketing and different
sure.
things that various companies have done to increase sales. And why do they do it? Because it works. And what
yeah.
they're doing is they're using the body. They're streaming information to the body first, and the body will change the mind. And in fact, in the book, I talk about trial lawyers and how trial lawyers know how to do this very well. You know, just the slightest insinuation, just the slightest physical object could change somebody's mind in a millisecond, and they know this.
Sure. Yeah, but that's the point. It's not the logical thinking about that and making the decision. It's that split-second aha moment when you get something, good, bad, or indifferent. That's when it's
well, dangerous. You know what? You know what, Michael? A lot of times, you know, people notice. They take notice how quickly they can lose control. Many people, you know, tell me, oh, you know, I get angry, you know, when such and such happens in an instant, I can't even stop it. You know, but in my book, I teach people how to observe themselves when it goes the other way. You know, when they do something or they experience something in the physical environment that changes them and makes them more focused or makes them calmer or makes them, you know, gives them the positive reaction that they're looking for, because there's plenty of those things too. And, you know, in this day and age where people are just on the go all the time, they're suffering from physical fatigue, memory fatigue, poor sleep, no energy to even think, and now insomnia is the number one negative effect on labor. Insomnia, you know,
yeah.
and there are so many, just like that acupressure point, there are so many things that we can do if we follow the body's lead that can give you a great night's sleep naturally without drugs, very, very simply, probably, you know, in less than just minutes.
But you said the whole thing. If we follow the body's leads, if we know how to follow the body's leads.
Yeah, and that's it.
Yeah.
And so we do a lot of this stuff is so easy, and we can do it naturally. But what when I started my research on this, I wanted to examine what launches us into those flowing moments, what conditions launch us into that, but then I was also very interested in how can we amplify those moments. So what if I want more of that kind of feeling? And then can I regulate it? Is there a way I can create that feeling when I want it or when I think I need it? And just like the apps in your electronic devices, you can use those apps in your body to acquire that energy when you need it. So simple, so simple. I can give you an example. You know, many people,
please, yeah.
In the afternoon, everybody experiences midday slump. We all do it. And so many people use those energy drinks, or they take that third or fourth cup of coffee or some caffeine drink. And we all know it's going to land us in a worse place than we were before we drank that. We know that. And sometimes, sometimes we have to. But, most of the time we don't have to. We do have some choice. And a simple thing like a walk outside, if we just take a walk outside, we can amplify that good effect that we're going to get from the walk outside. First of all, your body's craving vitamin D, and the light will give you the vitamin D. But beyond that, the light will change your body chemistry by eliminating the melatonin that's in your bloodstream, or reducing it anyway. And melatonin is the hormone that's making you feel groggy in the first place. So now you're eliminating the cause of your grogginess. You're giving your body the vitamin D that it wants. You're exercising your body, so you're doubling the energy. And if you do that regularly, you can start to trigger that effect automatically, and that's what we want. And there's ways to amplify it, too. There's other things you can do while you're on that walk that will make that energy last longer and will make it more dramatic for you, too.
I think the operative word here is intentional. And that's really where it is. And most people don't know, Joseph, they don't know that you can intentionally control how you feel.
Yeah, and that means we can intentionally control the situations we're in. We can intentionally control our health, So I think it's a win-win situation. I want everybody to have a great energy day every day, and I think I wrote the book because I want people to just wake up energized and happy, have enough energy throughout the day to do what they want, perform their best mentally and physically, and then I want them to come home and not feel drained. I want them to come home and feel good, get a good night's sleep, and get up and go out and do it all over again the next day.
We talked about keeping energy during the day, dumping the melatonin, getting the vitamin D up. But what about the reverse of that? What about going to sleep at night?
Well, there's lots of things you could do. There's real simple things that you can do. And in my book, it's body intelligence. In my book, I have hundreds of these things. So let's say that you're having trouble getting to sleep at night. I talk about the causes of that, but for sake of the conversation here, we'll just go right to the remedy. One remedy that you can try is most of us have some kind of electronic device, a cell phone, an iPod, or something, iPad. You can download white noise, and white noise. You can purchase from iTunes. You can purchase it from a lot of free downloads for white noise, but you can find it online, and you can purchase it. And if you play that for 7 to 10 minutes, what you'll be doing is literally changing the electrical activity of your brain. And not only that, but you'll be changing the chemical releases into your bloodstream, both. And that will assist putting you to sleep, and pretty quickly. Now, if you don't like the white noise that you download, you can use natural white noise, which comes in recordings of ocean waves. Waterfalls are another good white noise. But about 7 to 10 minutes, and if it doesn't work, you can repeat it. After a while, you should be able to get to sleep in less than a minute. Yes, you'll be able to get to sleep in less than a minute. After you
okay,
do this
so much
for a while.
Yeah, so much for Fox News and Special Victims Unit.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, okay. All right, now, let me ask you this. And it's a question I've asked a lot of people. you write a book, and it doesn't matter what the subject matter is, fact, fun, fiction, fantasy, and somewhere in the middle of that writing, you begin to realize there's something you've learned about yourself that you weren't aware of. What was that? Where was that for you?
For me, I think that came in after a couple of years of research on this idea of body intelligence. I think that my big epiphany, my big insight came. It took me back to my first book, which was Be Like Water. And I was using in Be Like Water, I was using a lot of mind over body techniques. But it wasn't entirely that way. It never was, because a lot of the techniques came from Eastern philosophies, which were embedded really in physical activity too. But it was still mind over matter. When I wrote that book, when I finished it and I talked to a lot of people, I said, you know, it's a two-way street. It's also matter over mind. You can change the mind with matter. And this book, the epiphany that I had, it became completely matter over mind. Because there are times when the mind is fatigued. And if the mind is fatigued or depressed, you certainly don't want that mind affecting your activity in the next office meeting or in the next important activity in your life, even, you know, whatever that activity is. So you need something. If you can use the body's energy system to rebalance the mind, and now you can get that synchronicity happening again. We're not abandoning the mind. Once you've rebalanced the mind and energized it properly, now you have a healthy, active mind that is controlling your body, and then the body will control the mind, and you've got this loop of energy that's really beautiful and healthy and feels great and flowing. So you've got mind and body operating with synchronicity.
Wonderful.
So
okay, we're just about out of time. So, website we can find you at?
You can find me at www.josephcardillo.com, and that's going to have all kinds of information on the tour I'm doing for Body Intelligence. And
great.
You can get Body Intelligence as of today in any bookstore in the country, in Amazon and Barnes & Nobles and all those places.
Wonderful. Hey, by the way, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Michael. It's always a pleasure.
Okay, take care. Have a good one.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I'm Michael Dresser.
Look for me.
And I'm Radio Susie.
And that, my friends, is...
The music softly...
It is a wrap.
But I hope you're smiling.